Hello, and welcome to French Football Weekly Podcast, the podcast that's just about worked out what time it is. So, as you can hopefully tell, I am not Chris, who is off doing Chris things. I am Philippa B. I will be your host this evening, and I am joined, as ever, by Jeremy Smith. Hi, Jez, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Well, I've injured myself again, so if you hear me swearing, it's not necessarily about the football this time, but we will crack on. And the thing is, we missed last week when there was an international break, and France had two kind of interesting and not in a particularly good way results, losing 2-0 to Germany and beating Chile 3-2. So, Jez, looking across these two games, how are you feeling about the current situation of Les Bleus?
Honestly, not brilliant. I mean, we could frame this as have I ever mentioned what an underrated god I think Griezmann is?
I think it may have come up once or twice.
Possibly. I think coming into the okay, first of all, they're two friendlies. They're relatively meaningless, even though they're pretty much the last couple of matches before the Euro squad is announced. You can argue that Germany, just like when they played France late last year, have sort of got more to play for than France in that it's their home tournament. They're in very bad form, or they had been in very bad form. They got a new coach to impress. It meant more to them. You could point to a few France players who have got bigger fish to fry in the next few matches. So you can come up with some mitigating factors, but the fact is that France were absolutely awful against Germany, and although they beat Chile, they weren't that much better in that match. And coming into the match, I think, a lot of talk was quite rightly about Griezmann because he had to put out the squad through injury. This is the first time he was going to miss a France match for 84 matches, which is just a stunning, stunning record. I think the next most is Vieira for France, anyway, consecutive matches of Vieira with like 40 something. And obviously, it's not just the fact that he's not there, it's the fact that, arguably he's there. In some ways, their most talented striker, midfielder, and defender. But what I wasn't expecting, I'm actually going to backtrack on that. I looking at the France squad, the team that lined up against Germany, I think there were two things that stood out. Firstly, the midfielders, Zaire Emery, Tchouaméni, Rabiot, all really good players, but all do a certain thing, and none of those things is kind of push forward, break lines, kind of support the attack, if you like. I think Zaire Emery could do. Rabiot has had his moments in the past, but they're not Griezmann's. The other thing is you look through that team, and to me, there aren't any leaders in there. Not a single one. I mean, you've got Samba in goal, defence, Koundé, Pavard, Upamecano, Hernandez, midfields. The three that I just said, Dembele, Thuram, and Mbappe. And, for all Mbappe's great points, and yeah, he's captain of France, he's captain of PSG when Marquinhos isn't there. To me, he's not a leader. He's only, I think, for the most part, interested in number one. And when it's not going well for him, he sulks, he kind of goes into his shell. And, yeah, you kind of think if that was the 11 that lined up at the start of the Euros, if we go a goal down or something like that, are we really going to be able to react that much? We went a goal down after 7 seconds, which, to relatively save our blushes, wasn't even the quickest goal scored that night because Austria scored after six. but is not good enough. And okay, Germany are a good team, but a team of the supposed quality, especially in defense of France, should not be caught out like that. And frankly, nothing really got better after that. Samba pulled out a couple of great saves that kind of saved further embarrassment. And I don't think there were any positives to take from this match. Dembele had a couple of moments, but that was it. Thuram, I think, is having a great season with Inter, but was awful in this match. Mbappe, we'll discuss later. He has obviously got club issues and sort of playing time issues, which maybe are affecting this. But he cares more than others, I think, but even if it's just for his own personal statistics. But if you're wearing the France shirt, whatever you think of the new shirt, I'm not as big a fan as some people, you should be caring. You should be giving 100%. And I don't think there are enough players on that pitch that were doing that. It was just really frightening to me. It was frightening how, and it, just going back to how I started, it was frightening how much Griezmann was missed, how much any kind of leadership was missed. And that was the thing. It's Griezmann's personality. I mean, I know it got sort of, you take the rough with the smooth, and he certainly had his moments in the past, whether it's sort of blacking up for a party or the sort of nighttime visit to a club that got him a ban when he was very young, his childish celebrations, whatever it is, at least there's a bit of infectious personality there. No one in that team from 7 seconds on kind of took the bull by the horns. And Upamecano, practically every article you read about him, apart from the ones recently saying how off form he is, practically every article is about how, what an introvert he is. Is that a concern? Because, does he have the personality to be a great France international? He was more vocal than anyone else on that pitch. And that just, to me, is frightening. So that was the Germany match. The Chile match, okay, we got the result 3-2. The three positives you could take is Giroud scored again.
Love to see.
Fofana, sorry?
We love to see it.
Always. And frankly, he would still be my starting centre forward because I still think he's more of a sure bet than the others. Fofana, I thought, was excellent. Again, or certainly relatively speaking, compared to the rest of the team. So he followed on from the last international meet where he was the only one that really came out with positive points. And Kolo Muani, who started the match terribly, actually ended up having a really good match, a goal, an assist. And I think that's very positive. I think he's one of those players that Deschamps clearly is willing to do well and is prepared to give more chances to than he'd give to certain others. So I think that that's positive. If we're going to keep seeing him in the squad and keep seeing him play, he might as well play well. So I was glad to see that. But again, very little otherwise. Tchouaméni still not great. Camavinga didn't do anything to suggest he should be sort of starting for France. Mbappe, no better really, even though he sort of gets an assist for the Fofana goal, which is ridiculous. It was, he didn't, it was just a basic sideways pass. Klos, who would be my starting right back, went off injured within the first 10 minutes, which is very frustrating from his point of view, from Marseille's point of view, from us crying out for Koundé not to be the right back point of view. And yeah, okay, we played some decent football in moments, but we still conceded two goals to Chile, again conceded early in first. And this is a Chile team which frankly is, almost most of it almost qualifying for an OAP pass from a footballing point of view, and with a coach who's only, I think this is only his second match in charge, and not exactly a deep squad, and you're bringing Ben Brereton Diaz on. So very, very few positives, and to me, lots of worries. And yes, it's all friendlies, and yes, France often perform badly in the spring and summer friendlies. And yes, these players have got such good quality that they could turn it on if and when they want to. But to me, it's, and yes, the form going into the last World Cup wasn't fantastic, but to me, that there's a few too many alarming signs. There's not enough players in full fitness. There's not enough players in full form. And as I said, I think that the leadership, you're losing Lloris, you're losing Varane, you're losing Pogba, and Conte, obviously not in the last World Cup, but still, I feel like I don't trust this team, and I don't actually think it's that deep of a squad that, a couple of major injuries, I think suddenly we're looking very, very weak, and not very, very weak, but certainly not one of the major contenders anymore. So I do not have many positives to take out of these two matches.
I think I've got kind of two questions. The first is one of Robert Ludlum's early novels, The Saliba Question, because he did start against Chile, but Deschamps' kind of loyalty to Upamecano when everybody, when I say everybody, I'm talking mostly about UK-based podcasts, is saying Saliba is one of the best in the world. Why isn't he starting every game? That's one thing. Another thing was there were some kind of odd comments from Deschamps after the break, where he's going, "Well, I understand that the players are a bit kind of not up for it because it's friendlies and they've got other stuff on their mind, and I understand that, and whatever," which doesn't feel like something you should be saying on camera. Do you feel, what do you think about either or both of those situations?
I mean, the second one, without sort of looking at all of the other teams' results, England didn't do brilliantly. Germany obviously did. Spain and Brazil played out an epic 3-all. All the other teams that you could say the same thing, that there's players who are sort of preserving themselves for sort of bigger Champions League matches ahead. I don't. I'm not sure that's a good enough excuse. And certainly, I just think if you're playing, France, Germany, it's got such a history to it. And okay, they seem to have played each other a reasonable amount in recent years. Maybe it's something to do with that. I just think you should be lifting yourself for a match like that, even if it's a friendly. So yeah, it is. I get him sort of defending the team publicly, but I hope that behind closed doors he gave them a bit of a rollicking, because I think they deserved it. And then moving on to the first question, ironically, when I say he, I get him defending the team publicly, I was really surprised at the comments he made about Saliba. I can't remember at what point, sort of saying, "Yeah, I've seen what he does for Arsenal. He does some good stuff, but he does some things that I don't like as well." Again, if he's giving Saliba a very frank explanation of what he means and room to, things to think about and room to improve, great. But I thought that was a very strange thing to do, to sort of publicly undermine him like that. France do have good centre backs. Saliba, now is getting the attention that we were giving him a few years ago just because of what he's doing with Arsenal. Although I do have a friend who supports Arsenal who said that his form in the last month or 6 weeks hasn't been so fantastic. But he would be one of my starting centre backs, but to be honest, Upamecano would be as well. It's Konate that I'm not at all convinced about. Again, Deschamps always had his favourites, the players that, despite their good club form, he hasn't fancied so much, and he hasn't got loads wrong. So I suppose you have to have a little bit of faith in him. But I thought Saliba, I don't think he helped himself hugely. I don't think he played that well against Chile. I think he shared fault for one of the goals. I think another really bad placement meant that Koundé, of all people, had to bail him out with a sort of goal line block. So, I wouldn't have said that he had such a great game that he kind of proved Deschamps wrong in any way. So, but Upamecano as well had a very shaky start to his France career and then had a great World Cup. So, some of these players need time and need playing time for France. So I don't. So if Deschamps thinks he's not quite ready, because you saw it's a chicken and egg thing, but if he thinks he's not ready to be a regular France starter because he hasn't started regularly for France, then that's a problem. But it's a problem other players have faced and have overcome. All he can do is maintain his club form, as I said, improve on whatever it was that Deschamps was alluding to, if Deschamps hopefully had the decency to explain that to him, and take it from there. But I thought it was quite an un-Deschamps-like comment to make, and I'm not sure what's going on there. There has, I mean, obviously there has been previous with Saliba, with that whole issue of another player being sort of banned for, let's say, pleasuring himself in a video, and Saliba sort of seemed more collateral damage than anything, that he was kind of in the video and he got a ban, but a ban that actually didn't mean that he missed any matches, or it was all very unclear. So I think he's one of those players that maybe people have got half an eye on, just to make sure that maybe he needs to sort of behave himself on and off the pitch over a longer period. I don't know, I'm speculating, because to me, he would be in my starting 11. I'm trying to understand why he's not.
So mixed fortunes for France there. And then we came back with a full round of fixtures over the weekend. And we're actually going to start at the end, as it were. I'm sure that's a way of writing a novel, because there was Le Classique, Marseille versus PSG. No PSG fans in attendance, as per several previous years. And both sets of fans annoyed about that. But Owen went into this with, I think, two fully fit first team defenders, which is not a situation you want to find yourself in when you're playing PSG. But they had some people called up from the reserves. Stefan Sparania was on the bench, which I hadn't noticed until John Johnson mentioned it on another podcast. But Owen kind of started this game like a train, presumably thinking, well, hopefully we can just kind of startle them and get something out of this. It ended 2-0 for PSG, who had Beraldo sent off in the 40th minute. So Marseille got to play a whole half against 10 men. And when you look at the shot stats, it was 22 to 8. It was 10 on target to 3. Amine Harit, after the match, was interviewed and basically said, well, we came up against Donnarumma having a game of his life, which is, true. He made 10 saves, which, according to Opta, is some kind of record for a PSG keeper. But what I was seeing from the Marseille fans was that they were furious at how this panned out because they could have done so much more. And if you look at who had the shots, it was everyone except the centre backs and Lopez in goal. Had at least one crack at it, but they still only managed an XG of kind of less than one, I think was one of the stats I saw. And it was a really very odd game to watch. Now, they also lost Chancel Mbemba fairly early doors, leaving them down to even fewer fit first team defenders. And we saw Vitinha open scoring in 53 minutes. Veretout had a goal ruled out on 58 because Enrique was in the way of Donnarumma. I've seen a lot of people saying, well, he wasn't interfering in play. He was standing right next to the man while a shot was coming towards him, and he was in an offside position. So I think that was fine. And then we saw Aubameyang being a little bit selfish, having a crack himself when there was somebody open in the middle, And then Ramos, who'd come on for Kylian Mbappe, more on him later, got the second on 85 minutes. So the OM fan discourse I've seen is that they are fucking furious. But they have a terrible record in this fixture, and given how they have to set up defensively from the get-go, you were kind of expecting this kind of thing. But playing against 10 men for over a half, you would have expected them to do more with those that shot domination. And yes, Donnarumma was great at the end, but it wasn't just about that. What did you feel about how this panned out, and in a sense, where Marseille went wrong?
I guess I'll come afterwards to the the as usual, the match seems the bit of a sideshow to the soap opera. But the match itself, I felt a little bit sorry for Marseille. I think they played a lot better than I expected them to. I think again that there's the fact that this is such a grudge match and all the usual cliches about form going out of the window when it comes to derby or something with a big rivalry. But the fact is that PSG's record against Marseille since in the QSI era is just ridiculous, completely dominant. You look at the two teams and the two squads and there's just no comparison whatsoever, and that's even a fit Marseille squad. And as you said, they didn't start fully fit, and they ended the match, or even halfway
Even
through the
less
match, were
fit.
even less fit. Yeah. So, all that considered, I thought Marseille gave a really good account of themselves. Yes, they can. People can say, well, you should have done more with your man advantage. Not saying that works against them, but PSG's two goals were very much on the break, so it kind of, in a way, implies that Marseille were doing the right thing and were, in a way, sort of, not dominating, but they were the attacking side and then just being picked off. The two controversial incidents during the match, the sending off, I thought it was a little bit harsh for it to be a straight red, but he was already on a booking, and I think another booking arguably would have been fair enough. So I don't have massive complaints for that. The disallowed goal, similar kind of thing. I kind of tend to agree with you that yes, he was standing in front of the keeper, but I don't believe it would have made any difference to the outcome. So I wouldn't have had too many complaints with that goal being given. So I think that kind of evens itself out. And then I just think ultimately, I guess, just the sort of class tells, that those two breaks were so incisively carried out, if you like, that you expect PSG to win, and maybe not like that. You expect them to be dominating and having all the possession or whatever. But maybe it's a positive that it shows that they can win in different ways. But yeah, I thought Marseille were better than I thought they would be, and had they got a result, as you said, Donnarumma. There weren't too many worldies there, but the fact that he pulled out whatever it was, 10 saves, shows that Marseille were not doing everything, certainly were not doing everything wrong. It's just that when it came to that extra bit of quality that you need, they maybe were a little bit lacking.
Yeah, and the elephant in the room, as it were, Mbappe in this game, you will all have seen the video of him looking pissed off when being taken off. Just want to mention, of the eight shots that PSG had, he didn't have any of them. But was that, given that PSG are actually playing tonight in a Coupe de France semi-final, it looked charitably, you'd say Luis Enrique was taking him off to save him for that game. I did wonder at the time if he was taking him off because they were trying to sit on 1-0 lead and just hoping things would work out. But they did bring on Ramos. to replace him, of course, got the second goal. But was Mbappe, of course, in the Chile game was booed at the Velodrome. And here he is again, twice in a week at the Velodrome, taking some pelters. But how did you feel he played in this one? Was that a kind of a continuation of being a little bit toys out of pram or sensible management by Enrique, or both?
If you take this game by itself, I wouldn't, not necessarily sensible management, but Mbappe was having a very poor game. So purely based on his performance in this match, I don't think it was unreasonable to substitute him. I mean, interestingly, they took Dembele off and he was having a good game. Maybe it was to preserve them both from getting a cold because the weather was so atrocious there, and you can argue whether that's why Mbappe went down the tunnel very soon after being substituted or not. But I feel like clearly this is part of a bigger thing, and I don't know if Luis Enrique is playing a blinder or not. I don't know how much of this, whatever he says, is his call or further up, but I don't think it's any coincidence that it's since Mbappe announced that he wouldn't be staying that he's constantly being substituted. I think I heard he's only played an average of like 62 minutes per match since then. Enrique is saying, oh, it's because I need to prepare my team for next season. I think that's a bit of a bullshit reasoning.
He's not starting every game either, which does seem a bit more of a power play from Enrique. It's like, well, now we know you're going, I don't have to do what you want.
Yeah, I wonder if
Right.
it's whether it's Enrique or Al Khelaifi. I wonder if it's, it's not the first time that PSG or Marseille actually, but have sort of tried to publicly kind of throw one of their players to the wolves. So I wonder if it is kind of a, as much as anything, a PR exercise and to kind of almost say, look, Mbappe was running the show here. We didn't like it, but now we're reasserting some authority. But that's just embarrassing that you let him run the show in the first place. I wonder if Enrique has now been given the authority to pick the team, whereas beforehand he wasn't. So he's making a big point that look at me picking the team and being able to drop Mbappe. I just don't think that reasoning, I need to prepare for next year. You should be concentrating on this year. And he can say, well, look, we've got, we're always going to win Ligue 1, so I can play around a little bit there. He obviously did play and did score against Sociedad, but I think there's a lot of silly games going on both sides. When Mbappe went off against or didn't play in the second half against Monaco, he knew perfectly well what he was doing when he appeared in the stands next to his mum. He knew perfectly well what he was doing. Possibly not. It was a brilliant. His look when he saw his number come up was brilliant on Sunday. And I'm not saying that that was consciously thought out. I'm not saying his mouthed son of a bitch was consciously thought out. But, players do know, especially someone like him, they know the camera's on them all the time. And the going down the tunnel and then the poignant photo posted on Instagram, this it's all PR and it's all a little bit boring and childish and distasteful on both sides. And I'm not sure there's many people, football fans on earth that cannot wait until all of this is over and he's left PSG, one way or the other. But again, I in some ways you can say sort of Enrique's played a blinder in that now because Mbappe's lost his form, he sort of proved his point that he's not as great as all that and the team aren't so reliant on him as all that. But it's a similar kind of thing to France. I'm not sure to what extent you can turn form on and off just like that on a whim. And I think you need a bit of élan, as they say in France, some kind of momentum or build up to big matches. And if he's constantly being dropped, can you expect him to suddenly be 100% again when it comes to Barcelona? If any player can do it, maybe it is him, but it just feels like it's playing a very risky game. And against Marseille, okay, they're going to win the league anyway, but had that goal stood, I can't remember if Mbappe was still on the pitch when Veretout equalised, but had Marseille scored again, had things been slightly different, does Enrique suddenly look very silly for taking Mbappe off and not having him on the pitch if suddenly they're chasing the game or chasing the winner in what is still an important match, even if it doesn't affect the title? So yeah, I just feel it's not really about the football at the moment. It's about the PR and the soap opera. And frankly, when it comes to PSG, I don't care so much, but I feel like it's kind of affecting France as well. And look, if it means that in the summer Mbappe's fresh when all the other top players aren't, then great. But I worry that this isn't the best way to approach a major tournament.
Well, you mentioned the title there. We had a multiplex on Sunday, which was kind of interesting for the bottom of the table because we had some quite strange results there. Nantes got themselves up out of the danger zone to a certain degree with the 2-1 win against Nice. Goals from Albini and a penalty from Mohamed after a penalty from Terran Moffey for the home side. Montpellier won 2-0 away at Le Havre. It was just that first half was so boring. I mean, when it's a multiplex, I watch the multiplex, and you can always tell if you don't see a second of a game until about 30 minutes in, it's not been a good game. But in the second half, things picked up a bit. Le Havre came out strong after the restart, but it was two goals from Ferry and Julien that won it for Montpellier. The one I really want to talk about is Clermont nil. Toulouse all now look safe, basically. There was two goals from Sierro and one from Dillinger. And we've been saying Clermont are done for a while, but I really felt that second goal, the Dillinger goal, showed something new about the Clermont situation, which was there was a run down the right with two guys tracking the runner, but nobody going in on him. He then put the ball across for Dillinger, and there were two guys in the box, neither of whom managed to pick up any of the onrushing attackers. It did look to me a bit like they have now given up and kind of accepted their fate after, a good result last. The week before last, when they beat Love, now they do look like they've kind of put the cards on the table and just gone, we're out. We also had seven goal thriller in Metz versus Monaco, or you may not
It's very kind of you to
potentially call it that.
To
Monaco
be fair,
went.
we've lost 7-0 to them, so this was a bit.
Yeah, well, so you got, but what I saw here was Monaco went 3-0 up inside about a quarter of an hour, and you're thinking, oh, fucking hell, this is going to be terrible. But then it was Metz managed to get one back, and Monaco scored 2 minutes later. Then Metz managed to get the second goal, and then Monaco scored like 3 minutes later. It just felt like it felt like a big dog playing with a small dog, like you think you're going to do something, no, splat. Which leaves Metz in second to last position. And even though scoring two goals against Monaco is probably good, conceding five is not. So, overall, the bottom of the table We've got Nantes and Montpellier moving up away from the drop zone. Love, obviously, in that matchup with Montpellier dropping back near it, and Lorient going down after a very late winner for Brest Del Castillo in the 86th minute, which leaves them in the playoff spot. So there were quite a lot of matches this weekend, particularly in multiplex, that really look to be solidifying what's going on at the bottom of the table. How do you feel about, don't want to say how do you feel about losing 5-2 to Monaco, but how do you feel about the overall situation at the bottom of the table?
I think sort of more generally that results couldn't have gone much worse probably for Clermont Metz, in that all the ones just above them won. And although it's still quite close down there, I think it just creates that little bit of a gap. I think as I don't think you're on the last pod where I mentioned it, but I think for, I mean, certainly from Metz's point of view, they've sort of burned most of their jokers in that they've got a very tough run in. They've already played most of the matches against their direct rivals, so it feels like they're almost entirely reliant on shock results. So even though they recently beat Havre and Clermont, the damage had been done before that. And while there's no shame in losing even at home to a very good attacking Monaco, who have hot and cold days and clearly had a hot day this weekend, I think conceding five, as you said, three in the first quarter of an hour, the fourth one sort of early in the second half, an awful goalkeeping mistake. I suppose if you're going to make one, you might as well do it at 3-0 down. Everything you said about Clermont sort of giving up, there was an element of that to Metz. And I just, for them, it's just lots of sort of chickens coming home to roost, in terms of sort of everything I've discussed before, like no really thought up transfer policy. Okay, they've been unlucky in that Jallo's been injured quite a lot and he's their main creative player. But as you saw last week, Atta is probably their next best, but he's barely been played all season. I think they've left it too late. They're not going to get many more 3 points this season, so they're going to struggle. Clermont, obviously, 3 points worse off than Metz. And although both of them are, in theory, capable of a sort of shock result here and there, I think they both need more than that to survive. And there's always a chance that those above them will do that. So not getting, their new manager or new old manager bounce this weekend. Strasbourg with a, good win against Rennes that kind of almost certainly keeps them out of trouble now. So yeah, I think probably those two bottom places are more or less sealed now, but it's still very exciting just above that. There's lots of teams within a couple of points of each other who could all slip into that playoff place. 3 points separating 13th to 16th. You'd think it's probably between those four now.
And what you mentioned, Strasbourg getting 2 goals in 2 minutes against Rennes to get themselves into something approaching safety. We also had a couple of games of teams quite close to each other, at least before the weekend. Lyon and Reims played out a 1-1 draw, which kind of helped neither of them, but there's still a 4-point gap between them. Reims in ninth on 39 and Lyon in 10th on 35. The one that was perhaps most interesting was Lille versus Lens. The what do they call that? The Derby du
Derby
Nord?
du Nord, yeah.
So that was two from Zegrova for Lille and Wahi, of course, scoring for Lens, which puts Lille up in fourth and Lens now in sixth. So there were some interesting results all over the table. Kind of the big match wasn't the key match, as it were, in how things are panning out. But obviously, Brest win keeps them in second, only a point clear of Monaco. But they're still on a really good run, so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens next weekend. But we also need to give our hats in the direction of Coupe de France semi-finals, because we had the first one last night, in which Lyon beat Valenciennes 3-0 with two goals from Lacazette, including a penalty, and one from, I cannot read my handwriting, Orban, I think, all of which happened in the second half. Now, the thing is, Valenciennes are in Ligue 2. They are currently dead last in Ligue 2 with a total of 17 goals scored and two wins in 30 games. So, kind of, I tweeted this out yesterday with the Talking Heads song, and how did we get here? So I think this was a completely understandable result, but even given the scoreline in the end, not possibly something that Lyon are going to be completely happy about. The second semi-final is happening today, Wednesday, which will be PSG versus Rennes, which I think should be a much better game. Did you catch any of the cup game? Because I just saw some highlights and people on L'Équipe TV swearing a lot, frankly. So
Because we don't have it in the UK, it's difficult to find recent highlights, but it was clearly as you said, 3-0 against the team at the bottom of Ligue 2. Lyon probably would have won out anyway, but the cliched crucial first goal. Valenciennes had a goal disallowed. Probably correctly, there was probably a foul in the lead up, but it was debatable. I don't think Lyon could have argued too much had the goal been given. And then Lyon had an extremely controversial penalty given, whereas it looked like, from what I understand, because the only clip I've seen is from a Lyon website, which did not linger very long and did not show any replays, which probably tells a lot in itself. Lacazette, by all accounts, had probably already lost the ball, had already started diving before he was touched, clutched whichever part of his body, certainly wasn't touched anyway. By all accounts, clearly not a penalty. It did go to VAR, and Stephanie Frappart, who was given 1 out of 10, which is pretty harsh by any standards, didn't change her decision. Which itself is quite interesting, because it seems that in the UK, if the referee is called to the screen, they almost always do change their decision. It happened at the Lorient match this weekend as well, which Loic Ferry, the Lorient chairman, didn't take very well. But as I said, not having been able to see a really clear shot of it, it certainly seems that everyone's opinion is that it wasn't a penalty. Valenciennes were extremely hard done by. And if you're already, battling against the odds to go a goal down to a very dodgy penalty like that, you can understand why it's a bit of a sickener. But from Lyon's point of view, they're from a disastrous start to the season, they're now safe and got a cup final to look forward to. So it's a bit of a change around for them, but it does feel like they were maybe helped out a little bit last night.
Okay,
And then
well,
I was just going to say, in tonight's match, as you said, Rennes are very much a bogey team for PSG, so it should be a really good one. And of course, when Rennes won the cup under Julien Stéphan, they beat PSG, albeit I think on penalties in the final. So a bit of deja vu there.
should be interesting. So the last thing we're going to get to is the Women's Champions League, where we had the quarterfinal results. PSG beat Herken Maths now, 5-1 on aggregate. It was 3-0 at Charlottetí. Tabitha Chwinga is currently top of the Divaal scoring charts with 15. She's a Malawian international, Malawi not being a greatly well-known football nation in either the women or men's game, but she's clearly mint. On the other side, we saw OL beating Benfica 6-2 on aggregate. Delphine Cascarino scoring in both matches. Diani getting two in the home leg, which they won 4-1, which means in the semi-final, they will face each other again. So we will have a French team in the final. And the other semi-final will be Barcelona versus Chelsea. So there's loads of kind of narrative going on here. Can OL get their ninth title? Can PSG win it before the men do? Can Barcelona continue their kind of continuing dominance over the past couple of seasons? Can Chelsea see Emma Hayes off with a bang after a slightly unfortunate end to the Conti Cup final at the weekend? So that's going to be very interesting. But yes, we've got PSG OL in the semi-final. PSG, the only team to have taken points off OL in Divan this season. They had a 1-1 draw the last time they played. But with Chwinga and obviously Grace Guillaureau and the other kind of stalwarts of PSG, this could be interesting. It's over two legs, of course, so that gives you slightly less jeopardy than a one-off game. Also saw that apparently Ramona Bachmann is leaving for the US, which strikes me as slightly strange given her quality, but we're going to be looking forward to those semi-finals when those come up. Now, looking forward to the coming weekend, we start off with Lille versus Marseille on Friday, which should be fun. Lens versus Havre on Saturday might be a little bit awkward to watch. PSG versus Clermont will definitely be awkward to watch. And then on Sunday, we've got Brest versus Metz. The multiplex is Reims, Nice, Toulouse, Strasbourg, Montpellier, Lorient, the Phil Chris Derby, before moving on to Monaco, Rennes, which again should be a good one to watch, and finishing with Nantes, Lyon. Which of those games would you recommend our listeners keep an eye on?
I think the Monaco Rennes definitely looks like the juiciest match, and Lille Marseille to open the weekend. I think they're, I mean, in terms of sort of competitive matches, they're the best ones. If you just want pure goals, maybe
PSG Clermont could hit double
possibly
figure.
Brest Metz, to be honest. But yeah, I'd say those two are the standouts. I think Montpellier Lorient, for the reasons that we said, both of them are right down there. And so if there's a winner, that's a big 3 points to take.
Yes,
And a
plus
big
bragging rights in the WhatsApp group.
that too. And Toulouse Strasbourg, that could be a good game. I mean, arguably they're both not on the beach. They're not quite safe, but they both had very important wins last weekend. So with a bit of weight removed from their shoulders, I think they both can, when they want to, play good football. So that, if you're looking for something just a bit different, that one could be fun. Now put all your money on a nil nil.
Okay, well, we will leave it there, just an hour in. So look out for the Coupe de France semi if you can find it anywhere. But as we said, Lille Marseille on Friday night should be a good way to spend some sofa time with some pizza. But Monaco Rennes should also be good fun on Sunday. So enjoy your French football. We will be back next week, hopefully a full complement, to take you through all of those games. And We'll see you very soon.